You remember Henry Foster as President Clinton's one-time nominee for the position of Surgeon General. After Foster's nomination was shot down, Clinton made Foster the president's senior advisor on teen pregnancy reduction and youth issues. Dr. Foster has written a new book called Make a Difference. It's part memoir and part about his approach to helping at-risk teenagers deal with low self-esteem, poverty, and violence. Dr. Foster is the founder of the I Have a Future program for at-risk inner-city youth. I asked him why he thinks the rate of teenage pregnancy is higher in the U.S. than in Europe.
In all of the European countries, there is K through 12 family life education. Secondly, teachers are not harassed and browbeaten about teaching human biology to people who are becoming adults. Thirdly, the media, all of the media, print, visual, auditory, are much more open about education, about sexually transmitted disease, about contraception, the birth process. And, of course, birth control pills can be bought across the counter in European countries. So those are some strident differences that we have to look at and examine.
What were your assumptions about teen pregnancy when you first started seeing a lot of teenagers coming to you who were pregnant?
Well, the first thing is not a singular pattern that we see. It's important for your listeners to know that most teen pregnancies in America occur to whites in this country. People tend to think that the teen pregnancy problem is restricted perhaps to the inner city or the ghetto or the Appalachia or the barrio. In fact, it's not. The Alan Guttmacher Institute, which is a research wing, clearly shows a slide that when you count only white teenagers in America, it does not change America's relative position to the other countries that I just mentioned. So it is a problem for the whole of the country. But what I noticed is that there are different antecedents. In the inner city, the problems generally are a little bit different from the suburbs, and so we have to take different approaches. In the inner city, so many of the kids really have no, they don't see other options. See, everyone has to have a sense of being or a sense of worth, and this is a way for them to have a sense of self at this particular point. But I asked, what were my own children doing when they were 12, 13, and 14? They were learning about a bigger world. So that's what we have done with the I Have a Future program for the inner city kids. We have gone in and shown them that there are things beyond the perimeter of the housing projects in which they live that they can be a part of. This past Easter break, we took 100 of these inner city kids, 100, to Los Angeles for spring vacation with 18 adult chaperones. These are the kinds of experiences that transform the abstract images that they see on television or hear on the radio into reality. They see black pilots. They see women pilots. They see all kinds of things that they would never see. 94 of the kids had never flown before out of the 100. This is how you create an awareness to do something, that there's something worthwhile, and that if you sacrifice for it, you can get there. But nobody will make a sacrifice for something that they don't feel has a yield that's important to them.
So what else do you do in this program to try to convince young people to avoid pregnancy and to avoid getting a girlfriend pregnant?
Well, two things. First of all, we have programs that I characterize as enticements and enhancements. So the two have to go hand in hand. There has to be something that they will appreciate and enjoy as they develop and develop their skills. But the things that we stress most are family life relationships. We have what we call core curricula. These are modules, and they run anywhere from 6 weeks to 15 weeks. One of the biggest ones is the family life module. It has to do with interactions. There's another important one on conflict resolution. There's another on job readiness. There's another one of these on behavior. One is called charm, that the women use, choosing how to adorn and refine myself. The fellows have a module called mature, men thinking, adorning, utilizing refined energies. In other words, we are trying to show these kids how they become socialized. How do you get jobs for job readiness?
Wait, let me interrupt you here. It sounds like your I Have a Future program isn't so much about convincing young people to use birth control or to abstain from sex. It's more about giving them more choices in life. More security in their future.
Absolutely. And that's what's necessary to have the self-esteem to avoid inappropriate sex. You know, the one thing I think we need to talk about, though, when we talk about all kids, both in any segment, we've got to do a better job in America, in my judgment, on educating our kids about family life and sex education that's age and grade appropriate. You see, we have a paradox in this country. we are in an open free market society, and of course, the media, you have every right to do this. You can stimulate and titillate our children with every kind of sexual message imaginable from the time they awaken in the morning until they go to bed at night. And in a free society, that's fine. There's no codified responsibility that the media show the negative consequences of this type of behavior, which it tends to glorify or promote. That's okay. But where the paradox occurs is when those of us who try to educate our kids so they will be less vulnerable to these messages, there's this element that says, no, education is dangerous. It will make children become sexually active. Now, the people who espouse this position, in my view, in the aggregate, are not evil, mean people. They're basically parents desperately trying to protect their children, which is fine, except that they are terribly misdirected. What they fail to understand is that it is not knowledge that makes people become sexually inclined. That is a biological instinct that does not have to be taught. Someone can be reared in a cave, and when they reach puberty, you can turn them out. You need to teach them nothing. To the contrary, what you need the knowledge for is to avoid inappropriate sexual behavior. Because a 12-year-old who has reached her maturation biologically, she is emancipated biologically. She can produce another child. She needs knowledge.
At what point in your clinical career did you start seeing a lot of teenagers who were pregnant?
Well, from the very beginning, when I finished, well, actually in medical school we saw it, but I saw it more and more in my residency training. I had a hiatus when I was in the American Air Force, didn't see too much of a problem there. But then I went into southeastern rural Alabama, and of course it was a different kind of teenage pregnancy then. A lot of these kids were marrying then. I don't know if your listeners know this, but in 1960, only 15% of teenagers who got pregnant were unmarried. Today, that figure is 74%. So things have changed. But I saw it then when I went to Alabama. I saw lots of very young girls, 14, 15, 16, having babies.
And did it trouble you then?
Of course it did. That's why I was there. One of the major things we did, we tried again to make birth control, contraception available. Of course, we always emphasize the area of abstinence, but realistically, when abstinence fails, you have to have a backup program. You can't walk away. And that was one of the things that we have done. But again, just back what you said, the key thing is giving people a hope for something else, to have a reason to delay childbearing. That's the whole idea, to delay it.
What kind of birth control do you think is most effective for
abstinence.
Young people?
Abstinence.
Right. Yeah, but as you said, if it's too late for abstinence, what do you think works best?
Well, if you just have to try, you know, that as doctors you have to individualize each case, but the oral contraceptive obviously works very, very well. It's highly effective, and it's proving to have a lot of other non-contraceptive benefits as we go more and more down the road. We're learning these things. But there's a downside. Everyone cannot take them. They have to be remembered. One of the newer methods that has been approved in this country within the last year or so is a long-acting injectable progestin, a progesterone called Depo-Provera, which is the proprietary, I think it's a generic name, Depo-Provera. But at any rate, that's a proprietary name. It is good because it only has to be given once every 3 months or four times a year, so one can't discontinue it passively as you can with the birth control pill, for example.
In your attempts to try to reach boys and to get boys to be more responsible sexually, what do you tell them? I mean, somebody, teenage boys particularly, really hate the idea of condoms because they feel it diminishes their pleasure, so they don't want to hear about it.
Well, first of all, once again, we start off with the same premise, which I hold, that being sexually active as an unmarried adolescent is not the norm. So if you are not in that category, you're abnormal. That's important to understand. But for whatever reasons, and I know where this is leading, after we've done all these things and someone fails to adhere to our recommendations or what we have said we think is best, then condoms is what we recommend primarily with males because in addition to the contraceptive issue, it helps protect against sexually transmitted disease and HIV/AIDS.
If you have a lot of hormones churning through your body and you're very sexually awakened all the time and you don't want to face pregnancy or getting your girlfriend pregnant, then masturbation is definitely an option that might be helpful. Now, Joycelyn Elders, who was Surgeon General before you were nominated, said something in a public talk about masturbation, and that seemed to have had a lot to do with her losing her position. What did you think about her comments on masturbation?
Well, first, her comments were taken totally out of context, and they actually were just misprinted awfully. They said that she said children should be taught how to masturbate in school, which was utter and sheer nonsense. My position is very clear. We have to know the whole gamut of human sexuality. That is a part of human sexuality. Our children become adults. They need adult information. And again, for those who really challenge this position, I wish they would go and take a look at some of the countries that do better than us. Look at the curricula.
Did you ever talk to President Clinton about that incident?
No, never. Not. I talked to Dr. Elders about it because we were in medical school together. She was 2 years behind me at the University of Arkansas.
Dr. Foster, do you wish that you were Surgeon General?
No, not particularly. I was not in Washington looking for a job. I was on sabbatical leave.
But you accepted the nomination. Were you really disappointed when the nomination was dropped?
Oh, I was somewhat disappointed, but I was neither bitter nor shattered. I lost no sleep over the process.
Do you wish you had answered any of the questions differently, like when you were asked, how many abortions did you perform?
Yeah. And well, yeah, in hindsight, I would.
What would you have said differently if you were asked?
First of all, I come out of academia, so I had no reason. Everything that I've ever done has been published in peer-reviewed journals, so there was nothing to hide. I had done nothing that was either illegal or medically incorrect. Everything I had done was legal and medically acceptable. The only thing I would have done different in hindsight, I would never have guessed on the answer. I would have given them the exact answer from day one, like I did when I went back and reviewed all of the cases over a 20-year period at Meharry, where we found 39 cases where I had been listed as a physician of record. And on those 39 cases, 29 had resident physicians in assistance who really did the procedures. I take full responsibilities for them because there's nothing, I mean, nothing illegal. But with my own hands, I probably had done about 12 over a 30-year period.
Well, Henry Foster, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me on your show.
Dr. Henry Foster is President Clinton's advisor on teen pregnancy reduction and youth issues. His new book is called Make a Difference.